Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And I honestly do not know what we're going to talk about this week. So this will just be a bit of a rambling mess, maybe. I don't know.
Well, we've got one thing to talk about because I finished Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Or was that last week? No, this week.
Yeah, because you just texted me a couple of days ago. I was like, hey, so I finished Spider-Man and I have thoughts. So spoilers, everybody, for Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. But I've kind of talked about what I thought of the show without spoilers, but I know what you thought, but you should go ahead and tell everybody else.
Do we want to do that right now? Or did we want to kind of talk about, cause I've been watching a lot of Gene Hackman, movies.
We'll briefly talk about Spider-Man and this whole podcast can be about Gene Hackman. So.
Yeah, definitely. I finally finished up the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, and the thing, like, there's a couple things that I took away from it, which, like, first off, like, we kind of have to talk about the whole last shot. Like we'll get to that later, but wow, that was something I wasn't expecting. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, the connectivity of it all and what it connects to?
It definitely has this, we're going Spider-Verse-ish vibe.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, very much, like, it has that kind of, like, let's do this. And I'll get to that in a moment. But, like, overall, like, what I appreciated about it was, like, I wasn't expecting it to be neighborhood in the way that it kind of at the end of it, like, it, like, this is the thing that I hate about first seasons, is that it gives you a glimpse into what you're going to get in the second season. And what it gives us is this whole kind of view that the entire time, this was not anything not connected, that the neighborhood is, like, kind of like the neighborhood of superheroes or super people. I love the fact that it was a time film. I can only imagine that you fucking love that it was a time
film. Look, we kind of talked about it with the premiere and, like, Doctor Strange, like, oh, he's out of place. And, like, he specifically says, oh, we're not supposed to be here. You think he's talking about this universe.
No, absolutely. That's what
And for it to come back around, and it's like, oh, it's not that there is kind of a multiverse thing going on, but, and definitely by the end, but it's not that he's in the wrong universe. It's that he's in the wrong time. And it's a time travel story. And in a Fry is his own grandfather kind of way, Peter and Strange and Osborn, they're all responsible for creating Spider-Man in a way you can't undo this thing, you know?
Yes. Like, it's so time loopy, timey-wimey, as Doctor Who would say, that you can't undo anything. Like, it's so, like, you're right. Like, it's so tied to...
it's not like if you introduce time travel, like, oh, what if we go back in time and stop Peter from becoming... Like, the time travel creates Spider-Man, and it's an origin so smart, but also not, like, overly complicated.
It's not
a smart way to do it.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. And it kind of ties everything very differently to to its own universe, right? Because like this is its own universe. This is not like this is.
I like not- that the pieces are there are still there from when it was supposed to be part of the MCU.
Yes, I do like that too, and I like the fact that they've kept certain people there. Like, I wonder how much Daredevil was a part of the initial plan.
Yeah.
And how much he got written out, and how much I would love to know, because it's very like it's interesting that he just appears in a few scenes, and it feels like it's a part of a greater thing. But then they kind of were like, maybe not. Maybe we will figure out what we want to do with him, but. We will introduce Finesse, which like you know we knew that was she was a character anyways, but like we didn't know that she was going to be like she basically became I feel like what Daredevil's probably storyline would have been through the story, like, but it would be greater. The interesting part is they're leaning into the Richard, I was not expecting the Richard Parker stuff. At all.
Yeah.
Like that and Webb, like it very much so like at the end feels like it was a hard, like they were like season two, we are hard. Like now that we've set up everything, we are hard veering away from Holland Spider-Man. And we are going to create this, you know, we're going to create our own little universe that is a part of the animated universe.
Yeah.
I have to ask, we see so at the end, like, you know, they do that whole thing, that whole, like, let's do a montage of everybody. And then like, you know, we see the Watcher, but my question now is two things. Like I knew, but I didn't know that, like, you know, the kid that's playing him is the same kid. Isn't he the same kid that's playing him in the What Ifs?
I'm not sure. So let me look that up.
Okay.
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Peter Parker is voiced by Hudson Thames. Let's see, is he What If or not?
What If?
Yeah,
yep.
He's
the same.
In the zombies thing. Yeah.
Yep, in the zombies. Okay, so.
But that's the only one Spider-Man's appeared in, isn't it?
Yeah, because like that is the only one that he's appeared in. Which means that he's probably going to. Okay, so. So that, my biggest question is this. Okay, if they're connecting What If to this Spider-Man universe, right, which it appears that they very much so are, does that mean that X-Men 97 is connected to What If, is connected to Friendly Neighborhood?
I mean, in the multiverse, like, you can just be like, well, everything's connected. But it's definitely not in universe for Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, because we saw Spider-Man of that 90s cartoon in X-Men 97.
That's so true. Okay.
So but it's definitely different universe, but also, like, I think the end and the existence of What If and the existence of the multiverse definitely leaves a door open for them to do connectivity things. Mm-hmm. Whether we see that or not, whether I even want to see it or not, is open to, like, I guess it depends on what they're going to do with it. I don't have a problem with everybody staying in their lane.
I don't either. But we already know that, like, because the Watcher is there, that he is definitely connected, right?
You put it there for a reason. Like, you don't, it is the Chekhov's gun of, like, you don't show the Watcher without at least a plan at some point for it to be about what the Watcher does. And I mean, we like we talked about, you do see glimpses of multiversal kind of things there at the end.
Yes. No, absolutely you do. And like, you know, like I said, like it's basically this, like after like episode 10 is definitely kind of like, let's go ahead and wrap everything up with a bow. And then let's go ahead and like talk about the future and what the future is for the, for this particular, like this particular Spider-Man. Okay. So here's the thing. I am not a big Richard Parker fan. Like, I am not, like, whenever they introduce him in the comics, I am not a big fan. Like, I don't like it at all. I feel like it breaks the, like, when you do that, you diminish Aunt May and
Uncle Ben. Yeah. The idea that he's a criminal, though, is a little bit... So in the books, basically what we've gotten is like, oh, he was a spy, they were spies, and like things have kind of like been in and out of continuity. But to my knowledge, there's never been, like, definitely not an in-continuity story of like, oh, he's not a good guy. And so that's an interesting kind of dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Similar, in my opinion, to like the Flashpoint stuff of like Bruce's dad, of Thomas Wayne being Batman and being like, oh yeah, he's Batman, but he's like shit. Like, he is not a good guy. He's Batman that murders, you know, like that kind of thing. I don't know. I'm really, really interested to see what they do with it. But also, it is a thing you could absolutely fuck up. Like, there's no... isn't, like, you could just fuck this up so badly.
Like, it has high risk, high reward kind of feelings towards it. But like I said, like I just, like anything that's ever been hinted at or done with Richard Parker, I've just been like you kind of made the whole Ben, like it until I have not seen a successful, like to mine, like to my reading. And I think I've only read two stories where Richard Parker was involved. Like, to my knowledge, I've not seen anything that makes it work. And so this will be one of those things where it's like, oh, okay, well, you're taking something that has never worked before, but also something that hasn't been fully, like to your point, like hasn't been fully developed into something that could be good. I'm interested, but I'm very cautious. It was just like, when I saw it, I'm like, okay, are you just doing this to be different? Like because we've gotten tired of the Ben Parker thing. But I mean, we've been able to like over the last, what, since the Holland stuff, like we've been successfully been able to like go around Uncle Ben and not have the whole Uncle Ben being shot thing. Pretty successfully. Like, you know, we've like, you know, I feel like No Way Home kind of made this kind of amazing kind of shift in like, you know, like the right hook of like not expecting it but kind of expecting it. With like spoilers for a 4-year-old movie, but you know, Aunt May and the demise of Aunt May, like I feel like that's kind of like what you do. And I guess because they haven't had some, like, it's weird because it's like this one, I'm very curious as to, because like Spider-Man, like at its core is about like, I don't want to say personal responsibility, but what you do with the powers that you have, right? Like great power comes with great responsibility. And he, like the people that he has been, like the person that like was like you thought was going to do that for him totally does the wrong thing, right? Totally does the fucking, like, you know, with great with great power comes
great respect.
And it's just like, oh you piece of shit. And it kind of tumbles him, right? Like that thing I really did appreciate is the fact that like it hit, like went, like, because you can even tell that Pete is actually expecting something really kind of quantitative and kind of heartwarming and kind of like mentorish, and it comes off like a fucking jagoff billionaire would say. It's exactly what a jagoff billionaire would say, right?
While wielding a chainsaw.
Yeah, seriously. While fucking
wearing sunglasses. Howling. Definitely not high.
Yeah, definitely not on ketamine. Definitely not using his child as a human shield. Definitely not a piece of shit. That's a foreigner that shouldn't be in our lands doing things for our government. Absolutely not. But it's like, so like to like I was going to ask you, like I kind of like that, but at the same time, it's like, are you going to take me 3 seasons for him to fucking finally realize and get somebody that gives him that kind of thing? And is it going to be Richard Parker? To which I don't want that. Like, that is something so core that I don't need. It's like, it's like the Snyderverse bullshit of like building slowly to stupid shit, but not building slowly to stupid shit that should be obvious. Like, you know, it's like, or like Amazing Spider-Man is so like I went back a couple of months ago and watched, because they were on Disney Plus. I have them. It's just, I didn't want to bring them out. Right. Like I have the Blu-rays of both of them. Right. 1 and 2. And I was like, I don't want to bring them out. Like, it's just not worth it. I can watch them on Disney Plus because they had dropped on Disney Plus. Those are so insufferable. They take the fucking tiniest things and they make them into these big fucking deals that are just not, like, Andrew Garfield is great, right? But he's surrounded by...
He got such shit.
He really did.
He's so good as Peter to just be, have those movies weighed down by, I mean, insufferable is a pretty good way to put it. Insufferable bullshit, like... Everything has to have this like grand thing wrapped around it. And it's just like, it's a dude in an outfit, like beating up, you know, purse snatchers and bank robbers. And like, you know, for that, the first 2 Spider-Man movies, even with the like Power Ranger Green Goblin, what they get right is the small scale of that.
Yes, the neighborhood of it, but also like kind of like the grand scale of like flying through the fucking like the world, right?
Yeah.
Like it does the balance right, especially part 2. Like I always go back to 2 because it's one of my personal favorites, right?
The woman I've been seeing, Stephanie, has never seen the Tobey Maguire movies.
Oh man, she is in for a treat. Like, she's very much so in for a treat. Unless she's an Andrew Garfield stan, which my wife kind of is, and she kind of doesn't like Toby because Toby can be kind of like, I appreciate this. He can be kind of navel gazing, but you know what? That's the Spider-Man that I grew up with. Like the combination of like I don't think that people really realize that the Ditko Stan Lee and the McFarlane were very much so kind of like they both had that. They both had the navel gazing. Like Lee always had the smart assy things, but he also like had bad shit happening to Pete all the time.
All the time. It was nonstop. Like this kid had the worst luck. you know, even when it came to like, oh shit, there are two very good looking women who are interested in me. Here's some horrible luck. You're going to accidentally kill one of them. So, yeah, of course that wasn't Stan Lee. Like there's a really, we're getting off on a tangent. There's a really great interview with Stan Lee. Was it Roy Thomas who wrote The Death of Gwen Stacy?
Yes, it was.
Stan was, I think Jim Shooter was the editor in chief at the time. Maybe not. So, it might have been Stan, but I don't think it was because the story got greenlit. Stan wasn't in office. He was out of town, like on vacation or something.
Now, yeah, vacation. I remember this story. And
is still like he probably played it up because it's Stan Lee, but to his deathbed, he was like still furious at Roy Thomas for fucking killing Gwen Stacy. Like he was livid, but like by his admission, livid when he found out that story went to press. And like, it's pretty funny that there are plenty of interviews with him. You could just go to YouTube and put Stan Lee, Death of Gwen Stacy. And I'm sure you can see him like just, you know, funnily furious about it. You know, he was not happy about it. And there's also, so I don't know how many people know this, and I would kill for English translations of this, but every time they try to do it, it falls apart. So in Mexico, they did not want to publish Death of Gwen Stacy story. So they, whatever deal they had in place, the Mexican publisher for Spider-Man, they got to not publish that story. Gwen Stacy lived, and there is a fairly long run of Spider-Man stories in Spanish that involve Gwen Stacy.
Huh.
Like,
interesting.
It's completely, like, it's not written by American authors and translated. Like, they just went their own way, and they're pretty sought after collector's items.
I had no idea about this.
Yeah, it's so at one point in time, Chris Ryall, when he was with IDW, was attempting to collect them and get them translated and published in English. I'm maybe getting some of those facts wrong, but there was definitely an effort to do it at least once, I think two or three times. And I much like the Batman 66 thing for the longest time, I think there's so many different partners and moving pieces. You can't get one set of people to agree, or all of them to agree on one like term to get this done. But you can search them out, you can find them. You'd have to, you know, if you can't speak Spanish, then you'd have to, you know, use Google Translate to get the stories. But it is like original Spider-Man work. Like there's the UK published Spider-Man stories that weren't published here. There's all kinds of stuff like that. But generally, those were like stories that you would kind of see on like the animated series, you know, like Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. They weren't necessarily like canon-esque things, whereas this was a very lengthy run of Peter and Gwen like having a relationship. And
it's awesome.
Like, it's pretty wild. Anyway, all that, going back to Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, it, for a show that started out like I see where this can be good. I think it ends up being far better than I ever thought it could be.
Okay, and so like I'm gonna make a point of the reason why I was surprised by it. And like, so Hudson Thames should shut the fuck up and never fucking talk again.
Yeah.
He should never fucking talk again. That was my first comment to you after I finished the run, because like his comment made it feel like it was just going to be your friendly neighborhood Wonder Bread. Like, that's literally what it made it sound like, right?
I know we kind of already talked about this. It is such a, like, you don't have to say it. But here's the thing. You go out and you be like, yeah, we didn't make a woke show or whatever the quote was. But talking about the show not being this woke product. But you have gender swapped characters. You have race swapped characters. And I am in full support of, like, I think every change they make is wonderful and works. And like, ultimately, like, the story is good. And that's, we are both on the side of like, is the story good? Because that's all that fucking matters. Like, tell me an entertaining story. The problem with this, like, anti-woke shit is, I still haven't seen Lightyear, but I'm just going to take a shot in the dark here. The problem with Lightyear wasn't that it was a movie trying to be woke. The problem with Lightyear is that it's not a good movie.
That's exactly the point.
Like, it's exactly just not a well-told story.
No,
so
it's not.
You know, there's plenty of, I mean, you could point to the Spider-Verse, both movies, and be like, if you want to, like, go by whatever definition of woke you want to go by, you're like, well, this is some woke shit. And, okay, but here's the thing. Those are well-told stories.
Exactly.
Ripley agrees.
I'm glad that Ripley agrees. Because, like, that's the thing, is that I was so thrown a loop. Like, if I'd never heard this little shit's comments, like, if I'd never heard these comments, I would have not worried about it, and I would have continued on, and we would have been having this conversation earlier, and it would have been a lively conversation. But like, that's the thing that I totally was, like, thrown for a loop for. I was like, you know, dude, you really need to shut the fuck up.
And you don't have to say it. And also, you're not, like, you're saying it to get people who are like, at, like, kind of anti-Disney at this point, which we won't have to get into it, but it's really fucking wild to me to see all these companies walking back DEI initiatives because they're like, well, because of the Trump administration. I'm like, no, because you have carte blanche to just be like, well, we don't have to do this. Like,
you don't feel
the pressure from, like, it's so stupid. Anyway, you say all that to get people who probably weren't going to watch the show to try to get them to watch the show. Be like, no, it's not woke. But then that's not true, though, because by their definition of being woke, the show's fucking woke.
Like, exactly.
It doesn't make any sense.
Why are you saying that when you're gonna just incur the wrath of everybody that doesn't want that, like, the exact description is the opposing thing that you're saying? Like, because there are
characters that are black that weren't initially black and are made black for what reason? Like, other than, like, well, at least now Osborne's hair makes sense. Like, other than that, it's just like, oh, well, we want Coleman Domingo, so we're going to make the character black. I don't know the reasoning behind it, and it doesn't matter because it fucking works. But, like,
the best actor for the
other side's definition of being woke is changing a character, like, in this situation, a woke version of Spider-Man. You're changing a character's race or sexuality or sex, like, any other things for the sake of changing it, not because it makes sense to the story. And that's their definition. That's what this show does. It does it well, and it does it great. It tells the story fantastically. But it's woke, man! Like, exactly. What are you talking about?
I have no idea. Like that's the thing. I was like, okay, dude, like, you fucking talking this shit? Like, you really, like, kid, just shut up. Just, yeah. Like, I hope that Disney put a it's muggle on this fucking kid. Foot
in mouth moment.
Yeah, like, seriously.
You sound like an idiot, and now, like, when people watch the show, they are just going to be like, what is he talking about? This is some woke shit.
Yeah, like, they're going to
get upset. That just incurs further wrath. You tricked exactly. them into watching it. Just let this shit speak for itself, man. And it would have. Like, it's really good. It's fun. It's funny. I think all of the villains are so well done.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the fucking Scorpion, man. Like, he's so good. Like, every time he really showed up, I was like, I love this guy. Like, he is vicious. Like, just gives Peter shit, man. Yep. Like, he is just, like, so much smack talk back.
And he's also a much more adept fighter, which is the best part about that. And, like, it's the first time that Pete has ever had something his ass handed to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are repercussions for that, right? Like, obviously, like, it's a big inflection moment, but not just for Pete, but for the entire universe, because it's the moment that sets his fate in motion, right? So, like, when we go back to the final episode and the spider drops, the reason why the spider is there is because of that moment, right?
Yep.
I do also love that they're giving Tombstone some love, like it in a man, big way.
Poor
right?
Lonnie Lincoln, man. Like,
yep.
It's one, like, it's this thing of, like, we know we're getting 3 seasons now.
Yeah.
Does Lonnie, is it, we start with Lonnie's a good kid who breaks bad, and does he get a redemption arc, or is this, like watching Anakin become Vader kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, like, my favorite moment about it was the duality of it, the fooling of Pete, like, oh yeah, Pete, we're gonna be together, and then he's just like, he gets into the fucking wagon with the 110th Street gang,
yeah,
like, what's left of it, and
tosses the jacket.
But my favorite moment is you can already see the white coming into his knuckles, like alopecia, like you know, the Michael Jackson of it all, like the skin issue. And, like, I also do love the fact that even though it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of teased that maybe what's her name has feels for Pete. It really isn't. Like, she still has eyes for Lonnie. And I feel like that's going to be the inflection point. That's going to be his turn. That's going to be the Gwen Stacy moment. Like,
I was just about to say that could be the show's Gwen Stacy.
Because Gwen is it's already been confirmed. Gwen is in season 2 and she's Spider Gwen. To which, like, I was like, huh? But then it makes sense because
that's where the other spider goes. Yeah.
Exactly. and then that sets up a Spider-Gwen, Spider-Man kind of, like, romance, it could be. Because I don't know if I've ever told you this, but my favorite, like, love interest isn't any of them. It's Black Cat. Like, it's always been, like, I've loved the kind of push and pull of, like, the bad girl and Pete. Like, that's my favorite thing.
It's definitely Marvel's version of Batman Catwoman, for sure.
Exactly. But it's always kind of like Pete, like, you know, it's like Pete in his, not in his feels. It's all kind of lusty. But I kind of like it because it's a teenager thing, right? Like, this older woman that's kind of into you. Like, I mean, we've kind of heard, like, the rumor is right now that the Holland Spider-Verse is actually going to, like, because Zendaya's schedule is what it is, they might actually be not, like, you know, kind of writing her out as the love interest of sorts. I hope they don't, because they've never really kind of gotten a true romance. Like, they've never gotten, like, the... like,
yeah, it's all been... starting fresh and her not knowing, like... it does give, like, those characters a shot at, like, a real kind of thing. But, yeah, I'm interested to see what they do with that. A version of Black Cat would be really, really interesting. Sydney Sweeney? That's who the internet wants.
I think it would just be odd because... like, she's so pure sex. Huh?
What's because of the Madam Web of it all?
Oh, that would... yeah. Well, and plus, I mean, she
just won the Razzie for Worst Picture, by the way.
Yes. Exactly. Like, which is kind of fitting. It is. I mean, like, let's be honest.
For sure. For sure.
If it didn't win that, like, you know, I was gonna raise hell. But, like... I love the fucking, like putting Holland, who's so kind of wholesome, and he kind of does, don't get me wrong, guys, but Logan will understand, and don't give Logan wrong, but Holland's Pete is very kind of Woody Allen nebbish. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to, like, guys, just don't take away from that. Like, just, like, his characters in his thing, he's so kind of, like, earnestly kind of, like, awkward that, like, putting him in front of somebody that is just pure sexuality or sensuality, that, like, that would be comedic and also, like, chemistry gold. I don't know how they would play it off one another, because we've kind of gotten to the point now where, if you really think about it, the only person that he's ever played off against that, like, in that romantic way is Zendaya. So it's going to be very, it would be very odd, but I don't know, man. Like, I don't like the, I kind of like, would like to see it, but anywho, like, it's like going back to the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, like, after everything was said and done, like, this first season does what every great first season does for me, which is, like, I'm like, fuck, why can't I see another season of it? Right? Like, it's like the first season of The Bear. Like, when I watched the first season of The Bear, I was like, fuck, I have to wait 2 years? What the fuck? Like, it wasn't like for you where you're like, oh, I have the second season right there for me. And you just jump into it, right? Like, years later, like, like, when I rewatched it with my wife, I was like, oh, like, of course, there's a second season. I can go into that. But it's like that for, like, me with any good TV show with the first season, which is give me a reason to tune back in and wait a year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, something that it's kind of like... so, one thing I did also want to ask you, in regards to TV, did you end up getting to see the Laverne Cox...
no.
George...
no, okay. I didn't get around to it yet.
No, I did not. There is a TV show that I did watch that I did kind of want to I did want to kind of talk about, which was kind of very interesting. It's very off the beaten path, you know me. We've talked about how I gotten really into cooking shows. And there's this new show that just dropped on Disney Hulu that's from Nat Geo. That's called No Taste Like Home with Anthony Porowski. And it's this TV show that's both like a genealogy and cooking show. And it's very interesting because the names that they got for this show. So basically the concept is this, is that a person has a dish, like a dish that's from their, like, you know, they're all like, you know, they are all, I wouldn't say immigrants, but they were all like all of their families are from someplace. Right. And basically they have this dish and Anthony basically takes them to the country of origin and does a genealogy thing where they get to know their family through the cooking. And then they go with him to the different places that they go to the different places that, like, you know, that the country of origin is from. And then they kind of meet people that are part of their family. It's a great show. And like, when I tell you the people that they got for it, then you're going to go, oh yeah, I kind of need to see this. So the people that are the stars of the first six episodes, or the first season, which is six episodes: Florence Pugh, Awkwafina, Justin Theroux, James Marsden, Issa Rae, and then it ends with Henry Golding.
And yeah, that's a pretty great lineup.
And it's a wonderful show. Sometimes it's emotional, sometimes it's fun, sometimes it's a little eye rolling. But all together, like, it's this great show that talks about not only just cooking, but what cooking means to people. And like the Awkwafina episode is like so emotional because of, like, if you know Nora's story, like if you know her story and like what her mother means to her and when she lost her mother, it's a very powerful show. But it's like all of these people are highly invested in this. So it's not like they're just kind of like whatever. Like, James Marsden goes to Germany and he like learns about all this stuff. He starts in Texas with chicken fried steak and he ends up in the mountains of Germany, at a beer fest, talking about, like, you know, his family and what his family meant to this place and what the food was there. It's kind of great. I mean, Issa Rae learns that, like, Issa Rae learns that she's from royalty, like, and shockingly, like, for her, like, that she's from royalty. So it's really kind of an awesome show, and it's very easy to digest. It's six episodes. They're all 45 minutes each. And especially if you like kind of like that chef's table, beautifully shot, wonderful looking cooking, like food, like, it's definitely for you. So I just wanted to kind of like throw that one out there.
It definitely sounds more interesting than the show. The only new thing I watched in the last week since we've recorded, which is season three of White Lotus, the first two episodes.
Okay. That was the other thing I had on my list to ask you about before we got into anything, which was, so white colonizers be going on vacation on white colonization platforms.
I talked about this. I haven't seen season one or two. I understand you can go in blind, but like, if like me, you're going to go in blind, you should know that this is a show that, opens with something startling happening and then flashes back, and we have now spent most of the first two episodes like getting to know the characters, and that's great, but they are just like boring rich white people with like seedy secrets that they keep hinting at. I know it's only been two episodes, but it's 2 hour long episodes, and it's well shot, well made, looks great. The cast is fucking fantastic. Nothing has happened. I'm enjoying it. I'm not hating it, because it is a great cast and it looks great. And there's some funny little bits in it. But for the most part, nothing has happened. And I don't know if I and get to episode four if nothing happens in episode three, because it might just become like, well, when it's done and I can watch the entirety of the thing, then maybe I'll give it a go. But episode three ends literally with, again, nothing happening, no revelations. Like, it's there is this, I get it. It's HBO. It's you know, you're gonna have nudity stuff, and like, good on them for it not being the women, it being a dude. But like, it's two episodes and like 10 minutes of both episodes is Patrick Schwarzenegger, like, essentially naked. And I was just like, that's only like one scene, but it's just like, oh God, whatever. But the cast is fantastic, and it looks beautiful, and that's the only good things I can say about it, because I've said it four times now. Walton Goggins is great, but
I mean, he's the gold standard. I mean, like, let's be honest.
But he's not doing anything though. Like, he's just moody and smoking cigarettes and like mostly quiet unless somebody tries to talk to him, and then he just acts shitty to them.
He's a rich white person
somewhere.
So season one, like, now that you've seen a season, that's very much what the vibe is for season one. Like, and it's all like people acting shitty and like nothing really happening, but kind of things happening. And like, that's the format. Something big happens. Like, you find out somebody's dead, but you don't know who's dead. And then they flash forward to, like, they flash to the beginning when all of these people showed up at the resort, and it's just how people treat themselves, how people are shitty to the staff, shitty to each other, and just generally just like colonizers be colonizing, and like, you know, even on vacation. And it's just, you know, I know enough of that shit to know that it's like, fuck these motherfuckers. I don't need, but there's like, you know, there's a certain section of people that love this stuff, that like get off on this stuff. Like genuinely like find this, like, I mean, I'm all for horniness, right? Like, I am there are shows that, like, you know, I specifically watch because they are horny. Right. Yeah. But this one, the ick is so large of like people that are just rich. Like, I fucking hate rich people. Like, I really do. Like, it makes me realize, like, I've kind of always known that I've disliked rich people, but over the past five to seven years, like, I'm actually in the middle of rewatching Bong Joon-ho's like whole entire like filmography. And
I'm going, like, to see that next Friday, by the way.
Oh yeah. Oh no. I'm seeing Mickey 17 like opening day. Yeah. No, you and I
didn't even bring it up. Stephanie was like, do you know about this Mickey 17 movie coming out? I was like, yeah, it looks interesting. She was like, yeah, you want to go see it next week? I was like, yeah, okay.
Yep. But the thing that like Parasite and then Snowpiercer kind of like brings into very stark clarity, what I love about him is that he hates rich people. Like, and he shows them for like the shittiness that they are. Like, I don't need like, oh, rich people are sexy, but they're still trash. Like, I don't care. Like, and that's what kind of White Lotus is. Like, you know, like, I find what like Danny McBride, Jody Hill, and David Gordon Green are doing with the Righteous Gemstones, and their kind of specific kind of White Lotusness with religion, like, I find that much more intriguing and much more watchable than what we're getting right now with White Lotus. But that's just a taste thing, right? I guess it's just a taste thing, because it's just like, I don't know, man. Like you said, beautifully shot, like, beautiful people, but they're just like, the content itself is just like, oh, they're just fucking awful. And they treat themselves and they treat other people like shit. And so it's just like, it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'll continue to watch it because it's of the zeitgeist. But it's like my question always is this, is that, like, people actually fucking like this? Do people actually relate to these fucking people? Like, I honestly want to know.
I don't know if it's like a, oh, look, rich people can be shitty and catty too, or they're just like us, or like, it's like that thing, like, watching, it's like a fictionalized version of like the Real Housewives shit.
Housewives. No, absolutely.
And I'm like, it's just like, it's not that it's not kind of interesting and well done. It's just that, like, I don't want to watch like an entire series that doesn't involve like something that feels important, like just day in the life of stuff. Like, you know, I don't know, like that stuff. Like, I'd rather give me Parks and Rec, man. Give me The Office. And I know those are like kind of sensationalized, and you cut out all the boring shit of day in the life stuff. But like, yeah, I don't know. It's again, like I said, it looks gorgeous, and the cast is fantastic, and they're doing a great job with the material that they have. I just need something to happen. So yeah, that's, I guess, what we've watched this week. We can, you know, talk about
Schwarzenegger Kid. Like,
yeah.
I'm just like, okay, like, I understand. Like, I understand, but come on, just stop, okay? I don't need to hear fucking Chris Pratt, like, talking about, like,
talking, you know, about what he his said penis, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, you know what? Maybe Chris Pratt should go back to his fucking meta sunglass bullshit thing with Chris Jenner. Like, oh, I just got that. The three Chrises. Like, because she's a Chris, they added her in. Oh,
I haven't seen the Chris Jenner one yet.
Oh, like the commercials, the meta.
Yeah,
the meta
I saw the first two that Pratt and
Evan or not Thor.
Hemsworth.
Hemsworth. There we go. Yeah. You know, I just like guys, you guys have so much money. You don't need more. Why are you doing these meta fucking commercials? Come on, stop it. Yeah. Stop it. Especially you, Hemsworth. You actually will have another career. Like, I'm waiting for Pratt to start like shilling some kind of Christian bullshit for me. Like, I'm just waiting because he's going to, like, it's just a matter of time. But Hemsworth, man, you're funny. Like, you have a career post Thor. I mean, you have a career with Thor right now. Like, I mean, you know, like, we all know this, but like, why are you guys shilling shit for Facebook, like, and Ray-Bans? Oh God. But anywho, that's neither here nor there. Did you see anything else? Because I did see one more thing that I wanted to talk about, which was interesting.
Oh no, I haven't. Okay. I haven't. So
what but else you we got? Will talk. Oh, okay. So like, I got one more thing, and then I want to ask you a question. So I saw, and I texted you about this. I saw the Anthony Mackie like Quiet Place movie. It's called Elevation.
The trailer. That trailer's really good. Yeah.
It's very much as prescribed. Like, it is very much like, you know, they were like, you know, Quiet Place, but you can't breathe and you can't, like, you gotta be above a certain elevation. And like, that is exactly what it is as prescribed. But I mean, it's like you could tell it's low budget, but they effectively use their budget and locations, because they film in the Rockies, to make it a lot bigger than you think it is. And Mackie and Marina Baccarin are both very effective. The thing that I didn't like about it is that it ends with this promise of a series. And like,
does that it's ever like, that rare so rarely works out? Why do they do this shit?
Yes. I have no fucking clue. I have no clue. Like, it literally, like, you get the like the reveal of what these monsters are, and it's a fairly interesting reveal, right? But it happens in the last 10 minutes, and then the last 10 minutes starts this like preview of the sequel that I'm just not a fan of. Like, I'm like, oh, come on. Unless you guys are, like, it was done for such a low budget and you sold it to all your foreign markets and made a profit enough to where you can actually make a second one. And that's your whole, like, kind of deal, like Elevation 2, getting elevated more, elevatier, whatever it is that they're going to fucking do. Stratosphere, Elevation 2, Stratosphere. But... like, ultimately, I'm like, man, it would have been fine if you had just kept it with what the reveal was and not given me this like preview of the sequel and just ended it right there. Like there's a 10 minute there. Like there's a whole, like this movie is not long. It's like maybe 95 minutes, I think 91 minutes. So like the first hour and 20, like you could have spent that 10 minutes having them defeat the enemies because they had the equipment to do it. Like basically there's like, you know, it's like A Quiet Place. How do you beat the bad guys? I don't know. We'll figure it out. And then we figure it out and yay, we get to beat them. Like you did that. You just do it in the town because they already have a town there, right? The town and gets encroached on and you beat them. And it's like, yeah, get a medal. The Wookiee doesn't get a medal. Like that's all they had to do, but they didn't. They had to fucking go for broke. They had to do the Golden Compass thing, which I always find is my favorite thing, is that you thought you were so fucking, you were so clever. James Bond, you got Nicole Kidman, you got all these people to be in this movie, and you thought it was going to be a trilogy or whatever, however many, and just didn't happen. People just outright rejected it. We were like, this is weird. You know, you had to wait 10 years to do a TV series, which I'm not even sure if the TV series actually finished the story.
I didn't watch it, so.
Okay. I didn't either. I never, like, it interested me.
I tried to watch the movie. Like, I think I watched the movie, but, like, I remember so little. Like, I'm like, there were polar bears. Like, that's what I remember.
That, and they tried to make Daniel Craig nerdy. Like they tried to make it like it's like he's Daniel fucking Craig. Like the only person that can make him nerdy is either Daniel Craig himself or fucking Rian Johnson. And even then, he's not really nerdy. He's just Southern, but Foghorn Leghorn Southern, which is a completely kind of different. It's not nerdy. So it's on HBO. It's HBO Max. It's definitely like a B movie. Like, you know, and if you like that kind of stuff, you're gonna be entertained. Mackie is great. Marina Baccarin is great. They take the material and it's exactly what you expect it to be. Like, they're both damaged human beings and they run with it, right? Like, it's kind of nice to see Marina Baccarin, like, doing something that isn't, like, a damsel in distress. Or, like, a
female... It's one of the things that pissed me off the most about her use in Deadpool. Is that she starts off as not that and ultimately just becomes that by the end of the first movie. And like she's, I mean, more or less wasted in the second and third film.
Well, and especially when you consider that they could have made her into Domino because of who, like, because of.
Well, she's copycat in that, like, Vanessa is copycat in the books. Like, she has power, she can change her, but, like, they don't do that. They just have her as Vanessa, and, you could have easily went another route with it and had her be more important. Instead, you do introduce Domino, but, like, she doesn't come back for the third one. Like, it's a whole thing. But, yeah, Marina Baccarin, like, off of Firefly... For the longest time, I was like, that's who should be Wonder Woman, guys. Now, she's probably a little, like, too old, unfortunately. The studio would just be like, aren't you, like, 30? So,
that reminds me, did you see Abbott?
I haven't watched this week's yet.
Oh, man, okay. I won't, because there's a whole running storyline and joke there about age that's pretty great, but I'll let you discover it yourself, but Elevation, like, it's like if you're on a Sunday and you don't have anything else to watch, you could do worse. Like, and I'm not saying like I'm not, it's better than a mid movie, because I feel like I said, like, Mackie and Baccarin definitely they definitely, like, deliver, and they don't, like, they don't sleepwalk through it. But I don't think that, like, I was talking with somebody about it. I'm like, I don't think that Mackie has ever sleepwalked through anything. Like, he's always given 100%.
You know what's kind of interesting? is that so Evans, Chris Evans wanted to step away from Captain America to do other things and more interesting things, and like I'm sure other reasons as well. His post Captain America film work is trash.
It like, is trash.
But the two people he left in that franchise, Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan, not only are continuing to do Marvel work, but are also at least doing interesting things outside of that while they do the Marvel work.
Exactly. Thus giving them their Marvel stuff a kick. Like Sebastian Stan, Academy Award nominated actor. Like,
yeah, like Stan seems to be going like the very, I don't want it to be like highbrow, lowbrow, but if you had, like, if you draw that kind of delineation, like,
yeah,
Sebastian Stan seems to be doing like the prestige things. Anthony Mackie seems to be doing like the really fun things. Maybe they don't light up the box office or anything, but like, they're fun and good. Whereas like Evans did seem like he was making choices that would be fun, but most of those movies, I don't think I've seen any of them, but if you just look at what's on Rotten Tomatoes or whatever, IMDb, whatever you want to go by and large, like they're not great. Like people are just like, yeah, whatever. Like,
yeah.
But like every, again, I know like people aren't watching the shit that Mackie's in, maybe, but like every person I know that has watched Twisted Metal, like I bring it up and they're like, can you believe how fucking good that show was? I'm like, right? Like it's fun, it's funny, it's like more people should watch this. Can you believe that this is actually a good thing? And it's wild to me that Evans stepped away, and I get like there's the physicality of it too, but yeah, he stepped away to do things and he's done nothing substantial, and yet these two guys are doing really, really interesting things on two opposite sides of like that spectrum, and Evans is just walking this like mediocre line.
Yeah, really? I mean, like, so I want, like, okay, so, like, here is his, like, post-career, which I find hilarious, like, after Endgame. You got Red Sea, which is this, like, message movie that's terrible. Like, it's just bad. Knives Out, great. Defending Jacob, terrible TV show. Like, I just, it's this whole Boston murder mystery with that little, the one of the kids from it, like who murdered somebody. Oh, sorry, spoilers. Don't Look Up, which he is such a small part of that I don't consider it. Lightyear, terrible. Gray Man, terrible. Ghosted, terrible. Pain Hustlers, terrible. Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, interesting, but he is such a small part of that.
Yeah.
Red One, terrible. Deadpool and Wolverine. I mean, his part is great, but he's also going back to the well, like spoilers, guys, like going back to the well, playing a superhero, right? And then it's like, yeah, and then we all know the worst kept secret in the world that he's coming back in Doomsday. Right? Like that's the worst kept secret, like, of all of this. So you have basically all of his work other than Knives Out, all of the work that he has done post Knives Out is terrible or bad or middling. Like nothing as good as, like, other than, like I said, Knives Out, which I feel like he's an ensemble, so he really doesn't, like, it really doesn't count. Like nothing can be put on the scale of Winter Soldier or even Civil War, right? But I figure like the high watermark for him, I feel like, is Winter Soldier. It's where they got everything right.
Yeah.
I feel Civil War has too much Avengers in it to really be a cap.
Yeah, he's not the only one carrying that movie. Not that he carries Winter Soldier, but like that's a like coming together of like, oh shit, like all of this works. Like we just made all of it work. So, but yeah, anyway, yeah, that's very wild to me. I'll try to check out that movie. I don't know if I'll get around to it or not, but
okay.
I guess it depends on how boring the Oscars get. So we alluded to it earlier, and it's going to be a little bit of sadness. But before we talk about Gene Hackman, I know it's like, oh, death comes in threes, it, like especially celebrity, but like it's been a like we recorded a week ago. In the last 7 days, Roberta Flack, Roberto Orsi, Michelle Trachtenberg, and like yesterday, I don't know if you saw David Johansen. Our Buster
Poindexter. Yeah, Dexter Poindexter finally passed after being hospitalized for a very long time, unfortunately.
And Gene Hackman have all passed away in the last 7 days. And, like, that's, I mean, those are, like, pretty substantial people. Like, anybody who doesn't know David Johansen, you may recognize Buster Poindexter. He's kind of this, like, lounge singer persona that he had. But if you've seen Scrooged, you definitely know who David Johansen is because he's the fucking cab driver. And he gets some of the best stuff in that movie. Him and Bill Murray have such a good... I mean, it's weird that two of the people on this list have definitely like shared scenes with Bill Murray. But yeah, him and Bill Murray get some really great... The scene... In Scrooge, where David Johansen goes through the door and Bill Murray tries to walk through it. Gets me every time, man. Like, he sticks it, like, point or whatever. Johansen sticks his head back out and laughs at him. And Bill Murray tries to punch him and he punches the door. Like, it just gets me every time, man. And Niagara Falls, Frankie. Like it is embedded in my head, man. Like him just doing that, you know. He didn't do a ton of acting, I guess, but it is definitely a performance that I will never fucking forget. Like it's just, it's wacky, it's wild, it's got a lot of pathos in it. Like it's just such a bizarre performance from, at the time, a guy who was like, isn't this the, what was his big hit as
hot,
Buster?
Hot, hot.
Yes, hot, 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 hot. Like, isn't this the guy that sings that hot, hot, hot song? Like, it's crazy. I'm sad to read that he was ill, sad to read that he had passed away. And Michelle Trachtenberg, like, Jesus Christ, man. Like
39 years old, not even 40.
And I read some details. She had just had a kidney transplant.
Yeah, from what I understand, and it didn't take.
Yeah, that's just fucking so sad. Roberto Orsi, was it
kidney failure complications from issues with his kidney, with his kidneys, which, like, I'm going to tell this to people, go to see a general practice doctor, insurance.
I'm in the process of doing that. Like I'm so terrible about my health that, but you know what? Hey, if you start dating a nurse, guess what? Like you're gonna hear the shit about, like, what do you mean you don't have a GP?
Because this is what's going to happen. You're going to die of kidney. Not you, but I mean, just saying. Yeah. Like this is what happens to people when they're like. Just, I mean, he was
blood work will like they'll be able to tell you like, hey, your kidney function's not what it should be. You know, if you start feeling weird, like go see mm-hmm. a doctor. Like, and if they're not listening to you, go find another doctor. Orsi, that is really sad.
But
he's a dude that, like, he was.
The deep state stuff, like,
yeah, it got a little crazy, man, and that's probably the like one of the reasons he like essentially stopped working, like almost a decade ago.
Yeah, Hertzman and Orsi were like, they first were like bad robot guys, and then they got so big.
JJ kind of like moved away, or they got big, and they kind of moved away from each other. But I mean, for all the things, like, you could pull him up on IMDb and look at all the things he was involved in. Mm-hmm. It is a hit or miss list. Like, oh, this was great. He got his start working on Xena and Hercules, and like built his career up from there. I mean, at one point in time, they were co-writing arguably the biggest franchise on the planet in the Transformers movies. I mean, those movies were making money, even when people were like, that wasn't good. They still made money. But probably most importantly for me, he, along with JJ and Kurtzman, I think Kurtzman was involved in it, were responsible for one of the most surprising television shows I've ever seen. Fringe was a show I gave up on like six episodes in. A guy I worked with, David Kennedy was his name, urged me, like, he's like, I have season one, you have to get, like, you have to watch this, like, you have to get to the end, you're going, he's the one that got me, he also got me to revisit Lost, another Abrams thing, but yeah, like, and I mean, spoilers for Fringe, when you get to the end of season one and find out the alternate universe stuff, and like, this is not really his kid. It's his kid from a different universe, and he stole him. And like, it's so fucking great. And that show goes so many places and does so many wonderful things. And, you know, it's weird to be like, oh, it's responsible for proving that we can do multiversal stories. But this is a show that was doing multiverse when, like, A, people didn't know what the fuck it was. Yes. And B, definitely the people that knew what it was would have told you, there's no fucking way you can pull this off.
Yep.
And they did.
Like, on a weekly basis, they were able to actually show you that this kind of stuff was possible. And on a budget, it wasn't and it's because JJ directed it. And they held the budget, but they technically see the cutoff. But the inventive use, it's so inventive in its use of not just CGI trickery, it's trickery and storytelling. To give you something that you was never going to be possible. Like, you were definitely right about that.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. I love that. I mean, we talked about this before. I love that show.
Yeah.
And it's also particularly a reason was because he went crazy and he started talking fucking bullshit. Shit now that he probably would have bought it for. Like, that's the weirdest part. To me, he essentially got canceled for talking some fucking crazy nonsense.
Yeah.
But I'm genuinely surprised that he didn't come back in with a podcast or something, become like one of these authors, like fake news. Essentially, he did. And it's really sad. I also feel like if it comes out that he didn't go to a doctor because he was scared that they were going to implant some shit into him, that's probably, it would not surprise me. Because yeah. This guy, like, when you read the shit that he was saying, you go, why didn't somebody put some fucking tape on his mouth? What the fuck? How do you ruin your career? Like, how do you actively ruin your career?
I mean, they were huge for several years, and it all just kind of fell apart, and that was a big reason why. But we didn't really say that much about Michelle Trachtenberg, but I honestly was not a Buffy person, so I know that's her big thing, but
that and Ice Princess, I think.
Yeah, I did know her. Like, she was in, what's the Scotty Doesn't Know movie?
Euro Trip.
She's in that, right? Yeah. Or one of those movies. Road Trip?
No, Euro that's Trip. The one. Euro Trip. Okay. It was Euro Trip. Scotty Doesn't Know.
And, super talent. Roberta Flack was pretty old, much like Gene Hackman, but we'll get to him in a second. But I'm sure some people were like, Roberta Flack's still alive? Unless you look her up, you might not know. She's the first person to win back-to-back Grammys for Album of the Year, I think. Yeah. You know, and everybody knows Killing Me Softly because of the Fugees now, but that's her song, man.
That is her song.
Yeah, she was freaking great. Like, and if it gets people to go back and listen to some of her music, then, I guess that's at least a positive. And then Gene Hackman, man. I guess we have to say, there are somewhat suspicious circumstances. His daughter is saying that, yes, he was 95, but he did Pilates, he did yoga. His wife was, really into helping him maintain a healthy lifestyle, even though he was retired, and 95, that he was in seemingly good health. And to find them both, him and his wife, both dead, is definitely suspicious. So
very much so. And also, from what, now it's coming out that it's been, it was 10 days. 10 days.
Yeah.
Before they found them. And it was him, her, and their dog all in bed. Somebody was texting me last night and we're what the fuck is this about? And I'm there's a part of me that feels like we are never going to find out what exactly happened. Like, this is going to be one of those mysteries that are just going to punctuate with a question mark that we just don't know.
The first thing is carbon monoxide, right?
Yeah, that's what.
But there's no trace of that, because his wife was, she wasn't 22, but she also wasn't 95.
No, so. There was a 30-year age difference. She was 61 or 62. She had her own career. From what I understood, she had her own career as a pianist, an actual somebody who played Carnegie Hall as a pianist. Like that's how good she was as a musician. So it wasn't like she was, she didn't have her own career and she was some sort of, I would hate to use the word, but somebody who is with Gene Hackman because of the, they've been married for 30 years, right? Yeah. I mean, she and you said, to the point where his daughter had said that she had taken care of him in a way that was supposed to, from all intents and purposes, he was still a very healthy man. So it's kind of weird. But I mean, also he was they have a Santa Fe ranch that's off the grid, not off the grid, but you know what I mean? Like, it was like, like it took 10 days for somebody to find them, right? So I don't know, man, like it's like it's sad because of the circumstances, like that's the tragedy, like, of it all, is that it's like
he she was 65, like that's yeah. And I mean, you're right. Julian Sands, right? Like,
yeah,
nobody, like, it presumed dead because, like, it's been a couple of years at this point. Nobody ever found the body. Like, we have their bodies, but like, they're found in the house with their dog, all three of them dead, like, with no signs of a struggle. Not like it's just really sad. But yeah, and he's been retired. It sucks that Gene Hackman's last movie was fucking Welcome to Mooseport, which is a terrible movie and probably not even the worst movie he ever made. But no, it's not the greatest note to go out on, like when you could have gone out on, like, say, the Royal Tenenbaums.
Exactly. Like, you know, you wonder if like because it was like that, Behind Enemy Lines, and then Welcome to Mooseport. I mean, hell, even Heartbreakers. Like, Heartbreakers is hilarious, and he's hilarious in it.
Heartbreakers is, like, I haven't seen it in a while, but it was one of those movies, like, when it came out, like, it didn't do boffo business. But, like, when I got around to seeing it, I was like, this is good.
Yeah.
Like, it's got a great cast. Sigourney Weaver, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Gene Hackman, Ray Liotta, Jason Lee, and Bancroft. Unfortunately, it has Jeffrey Jones in it. But, yeah, like, it's just, it's a lot of fun. Like, Sarah Silverman's in it. It's fun. Like, I had a really good time with that movie.
No, absolutely. And, like, here's the thing. It's like, he retired at 74. He had 24 or 21 more years.
Yeah.
Like, just retired.
Do you remember when he retired? There was like all this speculation of like, oh, he can't remember his lines.
Yeah.
Like there's so much of that. And it, like, looking back on it now, it's like, that feels like people pissed off. There's no way he was in that. Like, let's just be honest. Like, if a year from now we find out that Bruce Willis is dead, I don't feel like we're going to be that shocked. It'll still be tragic, but like, we know what condition like his mind is in, and like, it's such a rapid decline. For Gene Hackman to have lived 20 more years, when 20 years ago people were like, oh yeah, like his mind is gone, he can't remember anything, he's lost. Like, yeah, I'm not saying he could memorize scripts, like, but there's 25 year old actors who can't memorize scripts. But like, I just remember all the bad press about that when he was kind of quietly retired. It's like, oh yeah, I'm not gonna make any more movies. And like, yeah, now it just feels so shitty. Like, oh, these are people, like, you know, maybe trying to egg him back into it to for what one reason or another. Agents, managers, whatever. Like, oh, if we get this out there that, oh, he can't do this anymore, then he'll still keep trying to do it. So, I mean... It's nice that he had 20 years or so, like, it, him and his wife, like, he got to enjoy 20 years of his life. I mean, largely out of the limelight. Every once in a while you'd see a picture of him kind of looking disheveled, but just looking like a retired dude who does not have to give a fuck anymore.
Exactly. And like, I heard that part of the reason why he moved to Santa Fe away from LA, because like, he lived close to me. So I used to work in a movie theater, and I used to be a projectionist. And then There was an incident, and I will tell you off. I can tell you off, like off mic. I won't talk about it like on mic because it's. it was Adam at 20 years old being Adam at 20 years old and doing something that was like, yeah, I'm surprised I didn't get fired, but I got banished to a small theater, and the small theater was in Sherman Oaks, and I had to be projectionist, concession, and theater usher for this small theater. It's like a four theater thing. And sometimes that was very difficult in the mornings, especially during big movies, because people like this theater was like a small theater, but it was big enough to where people knew about it. The people that knew about it would come to this fucking thing because they knew it was out of the way, and they wanted to beat the crowds back when you didn't have assigned seating, right? So I was there for like 6 months. And the reason why they pushed me over there was because it was 15 miles away from my other theater, the theater that I used to work at. But what they didn't know was it was actually closer. So it was kind of like a fuck you. Like, I will go here. I'm not going to get fired. I will just continue to work because I loved projecting movies. But one of our patrons was Gene Hackman, and he would come in like on a random Tuesday or Wednesday and go see a movie. And like, you know, the theater policy always was, is that you do not treat them like anything. Like, you just treat them like a normal patron. Right. And so like, he would come in, get his, like, he would go to see, like, it would be random times. Like, it could be a Tuesday, it could be a Wednesday, but he'd come in, pay for his ticket. He wouldn't even use his SAT card. He would just pay for his ticket, pay for a medium Diet Coke and a medium popcorn by himself, and go see whatever the newest film was. And it was kind of weird. It was like going, oh shit, there's Gene Hackman. And he wouldn't say anything to you. Like, he would just, like, you know, medium Diet Coke, popcorn, and you'd get it to him, and he'd go off and go see his movie. It was kind of great. But he always had that disheveled look. He always had that, like, it looks like he literally walked out of bed, like, hair was all kind of disheveled, like, you know, looked like he, like, you know, he had a rough night the night before. But I mean, it was just the look that he had, right?
Yeah.
And this was well before he retired. This was like 98 to 99, somewhere around that time frame. So, I mean, he was still working, and like, you know, I saw maybe a handful of times, the times that I was there, like the 6 months that I was there. I saw it maybe five or six times, but it was cool to see Gene Hackman. It was like, Gene Hackman, he's tall. So yeah, you know, so that's my interaction with him.
I'm curious, like, what's your, like, everybody shouts out the one, like, okay, yeah, Popeye Doyle, French Connection,
yeah.
French Connection too. Yeah, The Conversation, like, The Poseidon Adventure, like, but there's some, like, unsung Superman, of course, some unsung Hackman for sure. Like, I'm curious, like, what your, like, favorite not big Hackman performance.
Okay, so there's a couple. Okay, so there's the one that really brought him to my attention, the one that my dad loved, that I was like, oh, okay. Which, like, I saw at a drive-in, which was, like, okay, so, like, there's a few. So, like, this one is the one that was like, oh, okay, this guy's a dude. This is the dude. Bat 21. Did you ever see that Vietnam
film? I've never seen Bat 21.
Okay. So, the quick sell on Bat 21 is that he plays this, like, he plays this weapons expert that is flying. He's in Vietnam, but he's not a part of Vietnam. He's just like a weapons expert. So he knows how, like, missiles work and all that stuff. And he's like in Vietnam because he's that kind of dude. He's like, I mean, like, again, it was made in 88. So he's like close to 60 at this point. Right. And so he's flying. He's flying a Cessna kind of plane, and he gets shot down, but he's an ex-military guy. And so, like, he's over enemy lines. And this is what I find hilarious, because behind enemy lines, he basically plays the same kind of role, but he's not shot over, you know, Luke Wilson is, or Owen Wilson is shot over enemy lines. And basically it's how working with a recon pilot played by Danny Glover and a couple of other guys like Jerry Reed of like Eastbound and Down song fame is one of these guys. And do you know who David Marshall Grant is? If you know who he is, you know who he is. He was the guy in he was Kevin Costner's younger brother in American Flyers.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So they all play pilots, recon pilots, that are trying to not just save him, but get him out of enemy territory. And it's this very kind of like cat and mouse. It's the unamped up version of Behind Enemy Lines. Like when I saw Behind Enemy Lines, I was like, you motherfuckers. Like, I know why Gene Hackman took this role. He probably went on set because, I mean, he was notorious for being very wily and cranky, right? And I can almost imagine, like, he took the role in Behind Enemy Lines, and when he was on set, he was like, I need $5 million more because you fucking stole Bat 21, and I'm going to fucking say it in every fucking interview. So you're going to give me $5 million more, and you're going to give me the above-the-line credit over Owen Wilson. And they were like, okay, Gene, you're the man. But this one, it's not as MTV flavored, but damn, is it good. Like, I fucking love this movie. Like, I saw this in the drive-in with my dad. My dad was a huge Gene Hackman fan. And it's the thing that started my education of who he was. And so, like, if we're talking, like, unseen, under-loved ones, the other one that I love is the John Milius film. Or no, it's not John Milius. I think it's Walter Hill. Walter Hill, Geronimo, an American Legend.
Okay, I've never seen that either.
Man, that is, like, he was known for, like, at a certain point, like, you know, because he won the Oscar for Unforgiven, he did a series of Westerns, right?
Yeah.
Quick and the Dead, fucking badass movie.
Quick and the Dead is under, like, it is a, like, a popcorn B-movie, mm-hmm. like, thing for sure, but there's some fun stuff in Quick and the Dead, man.
Yeah, no, there is. And Geronimo, the American Legend, that movie, like...
You're right. It was Unforgiven, Geronimo, Wyatt Earp, Quick and the Dead, man. It was just like, boom, 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 my Westerns.
Yep. I mean, if you think about it, the age that he grew up in, like, that was prime time. Like, 40s and 50s was prime Western. So, of course, when we had that 90s revival of, like, if you were a director of power, you got to make a Western, right? Like, you got to make a Western. And he was a part of some of the bigger ones that were there. Geronimo was a complete and utter failure when it came out. But I remember seeing that on the big screen. And Walter Hill, I mean, we know Walter Hill. Like, he's known for Westerns. And basically, it's a not pleasant Western because, of course, it's about the death of the indigenous, like, you know, the indigenous people of the West and what they did to Geronimo, the last Apache warrior. And the best part about it is that it somehow Hill somehow manages to have his cake and eat it too, where it's like, he is extremely like it is not a pleasant picture, but it's PG-13. So it doesn't get too like, horrible with it. It doesn't go Schindler's List, though it, like, you know, we really should. There's another movie that stars Wes Studi, who is basically a central lead of this movie, that kind of does something similar, but it's also a lot darker. But this movie, man, like, if you look at the cast of this, like, and Gene Hackman is like the second or third lead. It's Gene Hackman, Robert Duvall, Wes Studi, Matt Damon at the beginning of his career, Jason Patrick, you know, and like MC Gainey, like Mark Boone Jr. when he was like when nobody knew who Mark Boone Jr. was, like he didn't have that portliness to him any like that he does in the current era. But this movie is basically about like the hunt, the government's hunt of Geronimo after he, like, you know, after he's seen enough and he was put into the internment camps and he fought back. And this movie is fucking good movie. Like, the only reason why it didn't make money was I feel like nobody at Christmas time wanted to go see a movie about white people killing indigenous people.
Yeah. And feeling guilty about themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So, but Hackman plays like this general and like gets the stateliness of being a general. It's really great. What about you? Like, what are your unsung? Right.
So I'm going to say a movie that everybody involved from writing to acting, directing will tell you it's a shit movie. But as a kid, I fucking love this movie. I haven't seen it since I was a child.
Okay.
Since I was a teenager, at least. But I loved Loose Cannons, man.
Dude, Loose Cannons, man. Fucking Dan Aykroyd acting a multiple personality fool. The Nazi, the killing of Hitler video.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And directed by one of my favorite, like, Bob Clark, man. Christmas Story.
Yeah.
Black Christmas. Like, dude, I'm there with you on this one. With Dom
Deputy, with a story by Richard Matheson and his son, I think. Like, Richard Matheson.
Yeah.
Noted sci-fi, like, you know, kind of drama-esque author is, like, credited with this like weird like buddy cop team up kind of like that it's the thing you were doing in the came out in the 90s like early like, 90s right at 19, like, but it was filmed in like 86-87 and just shelved for the longest time because like I said everybody involved with it was like, oh, this is shit, but like I watched it on video and I loved it when I saw it. I Dom DeLuise like is just wild and it's a crazy, crazy movie. I really want to find it and revisit it in the wake of his death because it's when I read that he had passed away, it is the one of three movies that immediately came to mind. The big one for me is Royal Tannenbaums, but that's also like, that's going to get a shout out, from everybody. It's one of it's his last like truly important work, which can we talk about the 2001 that Gene Hackman had, like Behind Enemy Lines, the Royal Tannenbaums, Heist, Heartbreakers. And one other movie, which is the third film that came to mind, he has one scene in The Mexican.
Yes, in The Mexican.
It's the best fucking scene in The Mexican. The Mexican is a movie that I really, really like. Maybe even love. I need to rewatch it. His scene in The Mexican at the end absolutely seals the deal for that movie. It's fucking good.
Yeah, no, it is. It's so, like we don't get that anymore where we get a final scene or we get a cameo. Like, we do, but we don't get it as much as we did back in the time, in the era. But damn, like, you know, imagine, like, having that year. Like, having that year, fucking five movies, and they're all, in their own way, they're all bangers, right? They're all, like, even Behind Enemy Lines, it's like, I watched that about, like, 7 or 8 years ago, and I was like, okay, I never have to see this fucking movie again. This is so 2001, it's not even funny. Because it's so, like, very much of that style. Whereas the other three movies, Royal Tenenbaums, Heist, Heartbreakers and The Mexican are stylish, but they're not like as much as that MTV like music video bullshit that Behind Enemy Lines is.
Heist is a David Mamet movie. Like, that's, you know, whatever you think, like, that's one of those things where it's like, oh, you sign on because it's like, oh, wait, David Mamet is writing and directing this? Yeah. I guess I'll do it. you know. Royal Tenenbaums, like after the fact, there a lot of things came. It was apparently very like contentious. He was not the most fun to work with, which also could have fueled some of the like, oh, Hackman doesn't have it anymore, and because it would be what, 2-3 years later that he would retire. But like, I don't, it's like, even Wes Anderson was like, yeah, it was difficult, but like, I don't know that he ever like full on, other people kind of came out and were like, yeah, Gene was not nice to Wes. And you know, part of that could be Hackman looking at Wes Anderson as like a nepo kid working in an industry that like he didn't not that he doesn't deserve to be there, but necessarily didn't really earn his way into it. He kind of was just, you know, able to get into it because, hey, he's a Coppola. You know, it's...
But also, like, okay, like, so, like, this is the thing that I always feel about Gene Hackman. Okay, so Gene Hackman, like, he did not become a star until 41.
Yeah.
1971, yeah. When The French Connection hit, and it hit huge. Like,
maybe 5 years earlier, he had been in Bonnie and Clyde, and it went nowhere for him. Like, for everybody else, it seemed to, like, hit big. But it's not until Friedkin makes him the lead in The French Connection that he, or like, oh, shit, this guy is a fucking capital A actor.
Yes. And here's the thing, is that he was 41. Like, he's literally 5 years younger than us, right? Like, that's the thing, is like, he was 5 years. Imagine becoming a superstar at 41. What does that do to a person? What that does to a person is it firms up that it took a long time and a lot of hard work. So anytime, say, somebody who didn't, like, think about everybody he worked with in the 70s, right?
What year was that? Was The French Connection?
71.
Okay, so he had started working 10 years before. So it's 10 years of, like, really trying to pay his dues there are plenty of actors who that happens to. For a guy on the level of, like, think about how great Gene Hackman is, and Gene Hackman had to work for a decade.
Yep. And here's the thing, is that you don't start hearing about cranky Gene Hackman until the 90s. Until the 90s, when he starts working with people like Sam Raimi, like somebody like, what's his name, from Get Shorty. Like, I heard that there were stories from there, even Tony Scott. But each one of those guys, each said they felt like it was a test. Like, Raimi talks about, like, how, like, on the first day on the set of Quick and the Dead, Hackman would just not do any, like, he would say, no, I'm not going to fucking do that. And then Raimi would have to go in, and he said, like, you know, I understood he was elected.
He needed the motivation, he needed to know why, like, you wanted to do it that way. Like, there's a really interesting story. Like, it's weird because Hackman's in it, but it doesn't really involve Hackman, with Young Frankenstein.
Yes. Okay, I was gonna bring that up, but that, like,
where Mel Brooks and what's his name at the star,
Gene Wilder,
had a very heated argument about the way to do something. And, like, Gene Wilder, like, basically threatened to, he was like, this is the way we should do it. And, like, if we're not going to do it this way, then I don't think I can be involved in the movie. And then he was like, oh, okay, well, we'll do it your way. And Gene Wilder, I may be, like, getting the story wrong, but Gene Wilder says, like, why did you fight me on this? And he's like, well, I just had to really know that's what you wanted to do, and that you knew it would work. Like, I didn't want to just waste time on something, on like some bullshit idea that you weren't really invested in. Like, he has to know you're invested. The Gene Hackman story of being in that movie is really also kind of funny, because he was tennis partners with Gene Wilder, and Gene Wilder was telling him about the script, and he was like, I want to be in that movie because I want to do some comedy. And he did it for nothing, shot for 4 days. And his last line was going to make espresso or something. Total ad lib. And the reason it cuts the way it cuts right after that is because the set, like, everybody on set just fell apart. Like, there was no, like, distance between, like, him ad-libbing that line and everybody losing their minds. Like, cameramen and all losing their minds and laughing. So it cuts immediately.
which is great. Like, but it's like, okay, so like go back to the thing of difficulty. Like, I look at it and it's like everything that I've, like, if you look at the people that he worked with in the 60s and or the 70s and the 80s, they were all people that were like, he worked with Sidney Lumet. He worked with Richard Donner. These are guys that even before they had their first big, like, movie, they had worked 10, 20 years in TV, and not TV of our era where it's easy. Like, TV, live TV, where if you make them a fucking mistake, you're fucking gone. These guys were professionals. These guys, like Hackman knew that he didn't have to worry about the director, because these guys were fucking, had been doing it as long as he had. He had come up in the actor studio, like, even before he got his first role, he had been on the stage for 10 years. He had been working with Pacino, like, think about that, guys. Like, actor studio with a capital A when it mattered. Like, when nobody knew about it other than the actors, and they were, like, doing wild-ass shit. Like, so, like, every time I hear about a story where it's, like, he was notoriously difficult, it's because it's, like, well, you know, you made two movies, and now you're going to get to work with Gene Hackman because, you know, they're paying Gene Hackman, but also because, you know, everybody else says that, like, you know, he's a great director. Well, no, motherfuckers, I don't know that. So, like, I mean, this is a guy who worked, like, you know, I feel like any actor that had the career that Hackman had absolutely has the right to fuck with people to figure out whether or not they are capable of doing what they need him to do. And if he rises to the occasion, like, Anderson didn't say anything. I wonder why. You know, Sam Raimi, like, the stories about Sam Raimi only came out third party because of the third party. Like, it's because of Bruce Campbell and his, like, if you read his autobiography, he talks about it. Like, there are stories, but they always come out third party, never about the, like, if they're a good director, never about the director, right? Like, you know, like Tony Scott, from what I've understood, like, you know, there were the Crimson Tide set was very contentious. Like, I my dream is that somebody would, like I would love for somebody to write a first person account of that set, because I mean, we've heard the Denzel story. You've heard the Denzel story, right?
Yeah.
Like, we've all heard the Denzel story about Quentin Tarantino, but there are other stories about, like, you know, Hackman, Denzel going heads up, the script being shit, it not being the movie that it was, and Hackman challenging Tony Scott every single step of the way, because he knew that this could be great and he wanted it to be great. And it's very telling that Tony Scott works with him again on Enemy of the State. Like, it's not like he goes and never works with him again. Yeah. So, like, you know, like, I always find that very interesting, that like somebody who has a notorious reputation. But when you think about it, it's like, why did he have a notorious reputation?
Yeah.
Like, you know, ask yourself why. Sometimes people are just assholes. Like,
Bill Murray has some really great Hackman stories from the Royal Tenenbaums, including him like being difficult and like saying, yeah, there were a few times I had to like kind of come to Wes's defense. You know, he's just a kid, but like for Hackman, that wasn't, you know, like you're doing an adult job. You being just basically a kid doesn't count. But there's a really, to my knowledge, Bill Murray's never named the actor, but he talks about a scene where he's like, I'm watching them film this scene, and maybe he's in the scene, and the actors in question is Hackman and one of the other actors. So one person that he's in that movie with and shares the scene with, he said Hackman is hitting it out of he said they do like 9 takes and Hackman nails it every single time, and every single time the other actor fucks up the take, every single time. And finally they do a take and Gene has had enough, so he's just doing it like half-hearted, not into it, and the other person finally nails it. And I'm just looking at this going like, come on, man, he's been giving you 110% in every single take, and the one take he's not there for you is the take that you nail. He's like, Gene was like a professional with a capital P. Yeah. And like, you know, if you weren't serious about it, then he could tell, and like he had to know you were serious about it. But I mean, he was great in every fucking thing. Like,
and there's no bum performances. Like, I've seen Welcome to Mooseport, and
it's not great, but it's not terrible. Like,
not him that's bad.
Yeah, yeah. I curmudgeonly Gene Hackman, like, has, like, in the Replacements was probably easily Ryan's favorite Gene Hackman movie. Mm-hmm. And his duck on a pond quote, like, was something like that was Ryan. Like, he loved that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like that curmudgeonly Gene Hackman thing, like, I don't know. It's just very, it's of its era. It's probably something you can't really get away with as much anymore. But I don't know. It's very lovable in a way. And like you said, it's a testament that, like, okay, well, those stories didn't come from Wes. Those stories didn't come from, I just blanked on his name.
Oh, Sam Raimi.
You know, mm-hmm. Partly because they're professional, but also partly because they probably understood like what that was, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, and like, you know, like somebody wants to talk about like the reasons why, why he did Welcome to Mooseport, and it was probably because of Daniel Petrie Jr., because Daniel Petrie Sr., his dad, wrote a few movies with Gene Hackman in it. So, you know, and he had worked like a lot, like he had been like 30 years, like at that point. Daniel Petrie Jr. had been 30 years in the film industry. So, you know, it's like, it's one of those things where, you know somebody, and it's not necessarily Nepo baby, but it's like, you know somebody, and that's just the way that it works. Right. But also, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I've seen it. He's great in it. Like, he is exactly what you expect. Like, he plays the Republican mayor. So, like, everything about it is, like, curmudgeonly. Like, you could do this in your sleep. They probably paid him a ton of money because it was Ray Romano, and they were trying to make Ray Romano a movie star, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it just goes with, like you said, it would have been great if it was Tenenbaums, but at the same time, you know, an actor does what an actor does, and he still, like, has a career. Like, you look back at that career, and it's just like, damn, there's not a bum performance. Like, the movie may be less, but not him.
You know, outside of the mysterious death and probably not ever really knowing what happened, and I mean, he was 95 and in good health, but, like, even if we look at it realistically, you've got probably 3 or 4 more years before, I mean, God, Jesus, yeah. To make it close to 100, I mean, who do we have? Dick Van Dyke? Like, that's it.
Yep.
Like,
that's it.
It just doesn't really happen for performers, or even regular people, but it definitely doesn't happen for performers. The tragedy is his wife. Like,
yeah,
that's, like, it's so fucking sad.
No, it really is. It really is. Like, you know, like, that's the tragedy of it all. But, like, the tragedy isn't the career. Like, we can still look at it and go, damn.
Yeah.
That's a career.
Yeah.
You know?
And to have that career, you start in your 30s. Starting in your 30s is wild. For cinema, anyway. You start working in film and television in your 30s. You hit it, like, 41. You're fucking just like, holy shit. Like, what is this? You do, like, just almost 40 years of, like, solid fucking work. Just absolutely solid work. And you retire and you spend the last 20 years of your life just enjoying life with your person and your dog. And, like, outside of, like, this weirdness with their death, which is weird and tragic, and, like you said, we probably will never know, and that sucks. But, like, it's this kind of picture perfect thing. I know if he were here, it'd be like, it wasn't all perfect, and it wasn't, I'm sure, like, lots of tumultuous things, but just, like, I don't know, man, like, could you ask for better? Like,
you can't. Like, that would be like, just to give somebody perspective on this, because I always feel like numbers in the past, that would be like me becoming a star in the year 2000 and then living until 2050, and up until, like,
working until 2050.
Working until 2030. And then retiring, and then living until 2050.
Yeah,
like,
there you go.
It would be 20, around 2050-ish is where I would have to pass. That's 50 more years, brother. 50 more years. Like, that's the kind of, like, you start at 41, and then you live an addition, like, you have a life lived an additional 55 years. Like, but then most of that is, like, supreme work, amazing work, right? And it's tough and it's challenging, but, like, for 30 plus years, you work hard, and then you get to retire and live another 20 years with your person. And your dogs or your pets, is like, fuck, man, that's amazing.
I guess what we can hope for is that, like, it was peaceful and, like, you know, I mean, there didn't seem to be signs of, like, I don't know.
They said there wasn't signs.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It was really sad to read about that. And, like I said, you know, it's sad when anybody dies, but, like, mysterious circumstances and his wife being in her 60s, like, that's just, like, that alone The first thing I thought was like, oh shit, like they died of carbon monoxide poisoning. The dog died, the wife died, he died. Like somehow they just didn't realize it, but there's no signs. I don't know. It's really unfortunate, but yeah, really what a fucking career, man. Like just so fucking good in so many things. And like I said, there's certainly the Mexican and Loose Cannons, and for you, Bat 21, and I already forgot the other thing you said.
Oh, Geronimo, an American
Geronimo, legend. That's right. So, but yeah, so much more. But like the one scene, and we'll end with this. There's a scene in Royal Tenenbaums where they're playing war essentially as kids, and they have BB guns, and he shoots Chaz, and Chaz is like, "You're on my team," and Royal tells him, "There are no teams."
No teams.
And that, I saw that. I remember what theater I was in, who I was with, and I remember that moment. And it is so shitty. Like, Royal Tenenbaum is not a good person and not a great dad. But, like, that's also a lesson that is so hard to learn. That, like, son, the people you think are always going to be on your side, they're not on your side, man. Like, you gotta know that at any point in time, the people that you think you can trust, that you love, that they're gonna hurt you, and it's gonna suck. Yep. And it's such a small moment in that movie, but it like just drilled into my brain, and I was like, that is poignant, man. And the way he delivers it in like this like laughing kind of manner, but like it's so fucking true. And
it really is. As much as it, like, the reason why I can't watch Royal Tenenbaums, and I like every Christmas I watch it, and it's because there's that moment, the dad, I can't even say it now, but it's the I had a bad year.
Yeah.
And
yeah, had a bad year, Dad.
That moment. Yeah. Like, and it's like, so like Ben Stiller will never be as good as he was as Chaz. And that moment, like that moment is the moment of his career. Yeah.
That movie is full of like it's perfect, but I think it's perfect in how imperfect it, every single person in that movie, I think, has probably their finest acting seconds.
Yes.
In any like movie they've ever done.
No, like, absolutely. Look at Gwyneth Paltrow. She won Oscars, but I will say the moment that Maude sees Richie's wrists and she cries.
Yeah.
Like that breaks my fucking heart, but it's also the best moment she's ever had. The moment where
Owen Wilson has never done anything.
Oh, like, no.
Yeah, I just always wanted to be a Tenenbaum.
Yep. Or Richie saying, like, and this one breaks my heart too. It's like when he says, "I'm going," like he shaves his mustache, and then it makes it even worse that it's Elliott Smith's song that's on there.
Yeah.
Because we know what happened to Elliott Smith, and this was before Elliott Smith killed himself. And he goes, "I'm going to kill myself." Like that barren moment. Because you believe, like, it's like these moments that you believe these people in, like, oh, man.
Angelica Houston, man, Danny Glover. Like, it's just so many. Yeah. It kind of makes me want to go watch Royal Tenenbaums.
And just cry your fucking eyes out.
Yeah. Gene Hackman, man, he's been missed. He's been retired, but like, yeah, such a tragedy. This week's just been full of tragedy, and that's just talking about the people that passed away, not the fucking tragedy of this country right now.
Oh,
So on that sad note, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can go read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieisle.com. Right now we've got a ton of 4K stuff that we're looking that we've posted about. Some really great spaghetti western, like undiscovered spaghetti westerns. We like, you know, not to make it sad again, but you got some stuff, some John Candy stuff that I've posted. And my review of Deep Blue Sea and the 4K for that, which if you haven't seen Deep Blue Sea, like, and you want something that's highly entertaining, watch Deep Blue Sea. I mean, I know it's a 20-year-old film, and or more than that, it's 25 now. If you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor and get a big tub of popcorn and watch that movie, because, man, it is great. It's great in the way that, well, I mean, if you haven't seen that, you probably haven't seen Rennie Harlan films. But yeah, it's great in the way that a B movie from the 90s is great. And that's all I will say. Well, you know, I will not say anything else. Other than that, and yeah, like Logan said, we'll be back next week, and we will be probably talking Mickey 17.
Yep, that's the plan. I plan to see it Friday night. So
we've got the big one coming up. The one Daredevil. That we've been waiting for, Daredevil. Yeah. So yeah, might so have a two-per
Daredevil and Mickey 17. That'll be on the docket for next week. So we will see you guys then.
See you guys then. Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 The Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I